Sketches New and Old, Part 3. Disgraceful Persecution of a Boy. In San Francisco, the other day, a well-dressed boy, on his way to Sunday school, was arrested and thrown into the city prison for stoning Chinamen. What a commentary is this upon human justice! What sad prominence it gives to our human disposition to tyrannize over the weak! San Francisco has little right to take credit to herself for her treatment of this poor boy. What had the child's education been? How should he suppose it was wrong to stone a Chinaman? Before we side against him, along with outraged San Francisco, let us give him a chance, let us hear the testimony for the defense. He was a well-dressed boy, and a Sunday school scholar, and therefore the chances are that his parents were intelligent, well-to-do people, with just enough natural villainy in their composition to make them yearn after the daily papers, and enjoy them, and so this boy had opportunities to learn all through the week how to do right, as well as on Sunday. It was in this way that he found out that the great Commonwealth of California imposes an unlawful mining tax upon John the Foreigner, and allows Patrick the Foreigner to dig gold for nothing, probably because the degraded Mongol is at no expense for whiskey, and the refined Kelp cannot exist without it. It was in this way that he found out that a respectable number of the tax gatherers, it would be unkind to say all of them, collect the tax twice, instead of once, and that, inasmuch as they do it solely to discourage Chinese immigration into the mines, it is a thing that is much applauded, and likewise regarded as being singularly facetious. It was in this way that he found out that when a white man robs a sluice box, by the term white man is meant Spaniards, Mexicans, Portuguese, Irish, Hondurans, Peruvians, Chileans, etc., etc., they make him leave the camp, and when a Chinaman does that thing, they hang him. It was in this way that he found out that in many districts of the vast Pacific coast, so strong is the wild, free love of justice in the hearts of the people, that whenever any secret and mysterious crime is committed, they say, "Let justice be done, though the heavens fall," and go straightway and swing a Chinaman. It was in this way that he found out that by studying one half of each day's local items, it would appear that the police of San Francisco were either asleep or dead, and by studying the other half it would seem that the reporters were gone mad with admiration of the energy, the virtue, the high effectiveness, and the daredevil intrepidity of that very police, making exultant mention of how the Argus-eyed officer so-and-so captured a wretched knave of a Chinaman who was stealing chickens, and brought him gloriously to the city prison, and how the gallant officer such-and-such a one quietly kept an eye on the movements of an unsuspecting, omni-eyed son of Confucius. Your reporter is nothing if not facetious, following him around with that far-off look. A vacancy and unconsciousness always so finely affected by that inscrutable being, the $40 policeman, during a waking interval, and captured him at last in the very act of placing his hands in a suspicious manner upon a paper of tax, left by the owner in an exposed situation, and how one officer performed this prodigious thing, and another officer that, and another the other, and pretty much every one of these performances having for a dazzling central incident a Chinaman guilty of a shilling's worth of crime, an unfortunate, whose misdemeanor must be hurrahed into something enormous in order to keep the public from noticing how many really important rascals went uncaptured in the meantime, and how overrated those glorified policemen actually are. It was in this way that the boy found out that the legislature, being aware that the Constitution has made America an asylum for the poor and the oppressed of all nations, and that, therefore, the poor and oppressed who fly to our shelter must not be charged a disabling admission fee, made a law that every Chinaman, upon landing, must be vaccinated upon the wharf, and pay to the state's appointed officer $10 for the service, when there are plenty of doctors in San Francisco who would be glad enough to do it for him for 50 cents. It was in this way that the boy found out that a Chinaman had no rights that any man was bound to respect, that he had no sorrows that any man was bound to pity, that neither his life nor his liberty was worth the purchase of a penny when a white man needed a scapegoat, that nobody loved Chinamen, nobody befriended them, nobody spared them suffering when it was convenient to inflict it, everybody, individuals, communities, the majesty of the state itself, joined in hating, abusing, and persecuting these humble strangers. And, therefore, what could have been more natural than for this sunny-hearted boy, tripping along to Sunday school, with his mind teeming with freshly learned incentives to high and virtuous action, to say to himself, "Ah, there goes a Chinaman. God will not love me if I do not stone him." And for this he was arrested and put in the city jail. Everything conspired to teach him that it was a high and holy thing to stone a Chinaman, and yet he no sooner attempts to do his duty than he is punished for it. He, poor chap, who has been aware all his life that one of the principal recreations of the police, out toward the gold refinery, is to look on with tranquil enjoyment while the butchers of Brannan Street set their dogs on unoffending Chinamen, and make them flee for their lives. Dash, I have many such memories in my mind, but I'm thinking just at present of one particular one, where the Brannan Street butchers set their dogs on a Chinaman who was quietly passing with a basket of clothes on his head, and while the dogs mutilated his flesh, a butcher increased the hilarity of the occasion by knocking some of the Chinaman's teeth down his throat with half a brick. This incident sticks in my memory with a more malevolent tenacity, perhaps, on account of the fact that I was in the employ of a San Francisco journal at the time, and was not allowed to publish it because it might offend some of the peculiar element that subscribed for the paper. Keeping in mind the tuition and the humanities which the entire Pacific Coast gives its youth, there is a very sublimity of incongruity in the virtuous flourish with which the good city fathers of San Francisco proclaim, as they have lately done, that the police are positively ordered to arrest all boys, of every description and wherever found, who engage in assaulting Chinamen. Still, let us be truly glad they have made the order, notwithstanding its inconsistency, and let us rest perfectly confident the police are glad, too. Because there is no personal peril in arresting boys, provided they be of the small kind, and the reporters will have to laud their performances just as loyally as ever, or go without items. The new form for local items in San Francisco will now be, the ever-vigilant and efficient officer so-and-so succeeded, yesterday afternoon, in arresting Master Tommy Jones, after a determined resistance, etc., etc., followed by the customary statistics and final hurrah, with its unconscious sarcasm, "We are happy in being able to state that this is the 47th boy arrested by this gallant officer since the new ordinance went into effect." The most extraordinary activity prevails in the police department. Nothing like it has been seen since we can remember. The judge's spirited woman. "I was sitting here," said the judge, "in this old pulpit, holding court, and we were trying a big, wicked-looking Spanish desperado for killing the husband of a bright, pretty Mexican woman. It was a lazy summer day, and an awfully long one, and the witnesses were tedious. None of us took any interest in the trial except that nervous, uneasy devil of a Mexican woman, because you know how they love and how they hate, and this one had loved her husband with all her might, and now she had boiled it all down into hate, and stood here spitting it at that Spaniard with her eyes, and I tell you she would stir me up, too, with a little of her summer lightning, occasionally. Well, I had my coat off and my heels up, lolling and sweating, and smoking one of those cabbage cigars the San Francisco people used to think were good enough for us in those times, and the lawyers they all had their coats off, and were smoking and whittling, and the witnesses the same, and so was the prisoner. Well, the fact is, there weren't any interest in a murder trial then, because the fellow was always brought in not guilty, the jury expecting him to do as much for them sometime, and, although the evidence was straight and square against this Spaniard, we knew we could not convict him without seeming to be rather high-handed and sort of reflecting on every gentleman in the community, for there weren't any carriages and liveries then, and so the only style there was to keep your private graveyard. But that woman seemed to have her heart set on hanging that Spaniard, and you'd ought to have seen how she would glare on him a minute, and then look up at me in her pleading way, and then turn and for the next 5 minutes search the jury's faces, and by and by drop her face in her hands for just a little while as if she was most ready to give up, but out she'd come again directly, and be as livid and anxious as ever. But when the jury announced the verdict, 'Not guilty,' and I told the prisoner he was acquitted and free to go, that woman rose up till she appeared to be as tall and grand as a 74-gun ship, and says she, 'Judge, do I understand you to say that this man is not guilty that murdered my husband without any cause before my own eyes and my little children's, and that all has been done to him that ever justice and the law can do?' 'The same,' says I. 'And then what do you reckon she did?' 'Why, she turned on that smirking Spanish fool like a wildcat, and out with a navy and shot him dead in open court.' 'That was spirited, I am willing to admit.' 'Wasn't it, though?' said the judge admiringly. 'I wouldn't have missed it for anything. I adjourned court right on the spot, and we put on our coats and went out and took up a collection for her and her cubs, and sent them over the mountains to their friends. Ah, she was a spirited wench. Information wanted.' Washington, December 10, 1867. Could you give me any information respecting such islands, if any, as the government is going to purchase? It is an uncle of mine that wants to know. He is an industrious man and well-disposed, and wants to make a living in an honest, humble way, but more especially he wants to be quiet. He wishes to settle down, and be quiet and unostentatious. He has been to the new island St. Thomas, but he says he thinks things are unsettled there. He went there early with an attaché of the State Department, who was sent down with money to pay for the island. My uncle had his money in the same box, and so when they went ashore, getting a receipt, the sailors broke open the box and took all the money, not making any distinction between government money, which was legitimate money to be stolen, and my uncle's, which was his own private property, and should have been respected. But he came home and got some more and went back. And then he took the fever. There are 7 kinds of fever down there, you know, and, as his blood was out of order by reason of loss of sleep and general wear and tear of mind, he failed to cure the first fever, and then somehow he got the other 6. He is not a kind of man that enjoys fevers, though he is well-meaning and always does what he thinks is right, and so he was a good deal annoyed when it appeared he was going to die. But he worried through, and got well and started a farm. He fenced it in, and the next day that great storm came on and washed the most of it over to Gibraltar, or around there somewhere. He only said, in his patient way, that it was gone, and he wouldn't bother about trying to find out where it went to, though it was his opinion it went to Gibraltar. Then he invested in a mountain, and started a farm up there, so as to be out of the way when the sea came ashore again. It was a good mountain, and a good farm, but it wasn't any use. An earthquake came the next night and shook it all down. It was all fragments, you know, and so mixed up with another man's property that he could not tell which were his fragments without going to law, and he would not do that, because his main object in going to St. Thomas was to be quiet. All that he wanted was to settle down.